Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. This podcast is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen loaded with top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. Perch has been busy developing new, innovative ways to continue to deliver product education and sales support to designers and consumers. Be sure to follow Perch on your favorite social media platform for announcements about the many new programs, demonstrations, and exclusive events to come. For a virtual showroom tour and to schedule an appointment with a sales representative, visit perch.com. Today, we welcome Laguna Beach-based architect Anders Lassiter. His award-winning architectural studio specializes in custom homes, restaurants, boutique retail, and commercial projects. In this episode, we discuss his approach to solution-based design, team trust, and how our current state of working from home has magnified the value of creative and innovative design. Let's get started. So, Anders, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast.
Thank you, Rick. It's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. It's great to have another architect on board with us. As I've said time and time again, it's all about community, and that includes architects. So I'm excited to hear your perspective on the design community today, as well as just kind of the world in general. We have lots to talk about.
I can't wait to jump into it. Let's go.
Let's start by talking about you. Tell us a little bit about you and your business so that we can all understand that.
Sure. Well, thanks for asking. It's an interesting story. At least I think it's interesting. I've known since I was 10 years old that I would either be an architect or a heavy metal drummer. Those were my two dreams. I thankfully have been able to achieve somewhat both.
Yay!
with my practice, my architectural practice. And I also have a band that I play with from time to time. I've moved from drums onto bass and guitar, but still, you know, to my wife's chagrin, I still like to play heavy metal. So we have a good time doing that. But
yes,
that act of creation, really, that notion of being able to, from nothing, create something and share that with others was such a powerful experience for me. And it started very early, both with music. My mother played piano young, and I picked it up young and found that it's very transformative, both for yourself as an individual, but also for those that listen. Similarly, with creating objects in space and time, and as an architect, that love started in seventh grade woodshop, where we learned how to do some basic mechanical drafting, take the little circle we had drawn over to the saw and cut out a wheel and make the wheel a part of a truck, you know, and so you could start from the abstract, build it into reality, and then make something that didn't exist before. That was intoxicating as a young man. So I used that to propel my career forward as an architect and found a real great love in making buildings and the built environment for people to occupy.
Awesome. So you knew early on. It's amazing when that creative aha kind of moment happens. And I think when it happens that young, we don't even realize it, but it's fun to reflect back upon it.
And I do reflect sometimes thinking, did I miss out? Should I have explored other options and not known what I wanted to do? But the truth is, you know, when I go to bed at night, I'm an architect. When I wake up in the morning, I'm an architect. When I brush my teeth, I'm an architect. I think like an architect, and it's something that occupies every, you know, part of my day and my life. And I love that because I really do love what I do. And how often is it that we get to live the life that we love, that we get to do the work that we love? And I feel so fortunate, really, that we have clients who trust in us to deliver great projects for them, mm-hmm. that we have colleagues, you know, like yourself and others in the design community. You used that word community, and it really is. We have collaborators that we can work with to help bolster what might be my good idea to begin with, but then can become even better with their influence. So just like playing music, Rick, you have others around you who are adding to the conversation, right? You're hearing one another, you're playing off one another, and you're elevating the music to being something better than what you were by yourself. And I think design mm-hmm. is exactly the same.
That's a really good analogy. We should use that. I'm always struggling to find analogies, and I think design professionals often struggle to find analogies when they're explaining to clients the importance, the value of that. I call it a synergy
yeah.
between, you know, the builders and the architects and the trades and all of that. And maybe next time we'll refer
music
to
a really
band.
Music is a really good one. Think about a jazz combo as they're, you know, exploring sonically different soundscapes and
right.
different areas. We're doing the same in our design language. We're just, you know, riffing and jamming in different physical manifestations than music, that's all. But it's very
right.
similar. And the other design professionals that I've really enjoyed working with are the ones that get that. They have a natural ability, they have a comfortableness about themselves, and they're willing to see where the project will go and not afraid to explore, you know,
yes.
and look in different areas and try to find perhaps different ways of doing things and not just falling back on tried and true, you know, good old standbys as solutions, but
right.
really looking for what's unique and interesting in a project.
Yeah, not just relying on what's on paper. Like we show up.
Totally.
We show up there for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. The paper's only part of it. You know,
yeah.
we often talk about how our drawings are not really our product. We don't make drawings. We use drawings to communicate ideas.
Mm-hmm.
What we make are the experience you're going to have in your home. So we
right.
make experiences. We use drawings to communicate to the builders how to assemble those experiences.
Right.
Explaining that to our clients is sometimes challenging because they say, well, you're an architect. Don't you make drawings? Yeah, we do, but that's just a small portion of what we do, and they're really not our product. They're our tool.
Right,
yeah.
right. Tell us about your team structure, kind of your business model, and the type of projects that you work on typically.
Sure. We have a relatively small office. There's me, and I have four other junior architects that work for me. One of them, Christine, she's my team manager, my team leader. She's the glue that holds us all together. She's also a really gifted designer and a terrifically skilled project manager and communicator. And fundamentally, that's what we do. We communicate, whether
yes.
it's like now speaking to one another or if it's communicating through our drawings or ultimately through our buildings, we communicate to the world. And I found that building a team of staff who know how to communicate both orally, like we're talking, but also mm-hmm. graphically and in writing, it's the biggest challenge. And right now I'm very fortunate that I've got a team of four people who are just exceptional at that mm-hmm. and able to help us deliver the kind of projects that we want to do. And primarily those projects are custom homes
mm-hmm.
Of all manner of sizes. We've done very small remodel projects. We've done very large new home projects. We just finished designing recently a 17,000 square foot house in a northern Chicago suburb. So we've done, you know, like dog houses to big houses. It's a wide range, and I like that because it gives us the opportunity to flex our muscles in different ways, right?
Right.
We've also done restaurants. We just finished the Hall Global Eatery at South Coast Plaza, 8,000 square foot mega restaurant with four different food concepts under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
We've done art galleries and museums and hair salons and clothing stores. So all of them, though, have a thread of consistency having to do with quality of the personal experience when you're there. Meaning
mm-hmm.
we're thinking about design from not an objectified perspective. While they're beautiful objects, we're thinking about them from an experiential perspective so that when one is occupying the space, one is having some kind of a transformative experience, really trying to elevate your relationship to the built environment.
Right. So it's that core thread that allows you to be so diverse, but you always have that theme, if you will, running through probably every one of your designs, whether
True.
It's a restaurant or an art gallery or a doghouse.
Or a doghouse, yeah. I mean, and it fundamentally starts with an idea. What
yes.
is the concept of this solution? What are we building these sets of of decisions, right? That's what design is. It's a set of decisions mm-hmm. that build upon one another. What are we building them upon? What's our foundational idea? You know, you mentioned a doghouse. We did a doghouse for a charity some years ago, and I had the notion that the doghouse really isn't a place where the dog is going to go to sleep, but rather the doghouse is a place that the dog is going to invite you, the person, the dog owner. He's going to invite you over for a party. What would a doghouse where he invites you over for a party look like? Well, it would give you a place to sit. It would probably have all of his food and like maybe some toys that you could throw for him. And the notion would be that if you think about it from the dog's perspective, bringing his owner over for a visit, what would that house look like?
Right.
It's not probably like Snoopy's doghouse, right?
Right.
It's maybe more like a piece of furniture that accommodates the dog, right? Here's a couch the dog can get up onto. So again, leading with the idea and letting the idea inform the resolution has been that constant thread through all those projects.
Right.
And thankfully, our clients have allowed us to do that, have trusted in us that there is an idea, that we're guiding them on a map, that there is a set of destinations in mind. And while we might wander afield left and right and explore things along the way, the journey is always leading towards the ultimate, you know, idea and resolution of that idea.
Right, that core concept.
Yeah.
That core concept that leads everything. I was going to ask you about where your projects are, if it takes you outside of California to other states and even other countries. You mentioned that you did some work in Chicago.
Yep.
Do you do work all over the place?
You know, I've been very fortunate and I'd love to do more, but right now, for instance, we have a new house in Greece that we're working on.
Wow.
Which is really interesting. And talking about collaborating, we're collaborating with two Greek architects plus the Greek homeowner who's married to an American here. So we've got a number of different perspectives and different time zones and different agendas to be served,
sure,
as it were. So that's proven to be a little bit challenging, but an awful lot of fun because their environment, their topography, their building site is very similar to a lot of the homes we do in Laguna Beach. So we're using our knowledge and our, you know, the wealth of experience to help them in Greece deliver something that's a little bit different than they might have otherwise done had they just hired a Greek architect to do their project. So
Right. That's
been fun, is trying to bring a sense of California to the Greek coastline.
How fun.
Yeah. So we've done Greece. We've done a house in Bermuda. We've done a couple in Hawaii. We just finished the design on a house on the Big Island in Hawaii. We've done things in Texas and Arizona. So we've had an ability to be around Mammoth, you know, in California, but Northern mm-hmm. California. So we've had an opportunity to go into other areas. But again, that thread of thought that weaves through all the projects is just that there is a core idea. And the idea is obviously different in Chicago than it would be here in Dana Point or Laguna Beach, for instance.
Right.
In fact, that particular client from Chicago had seen a house that we had done in Dana Point and said,
funny,
I want that house on my site in Chicago. Now, of course, his site in Chicago is this big wooded acreage, and he had seen a little narrow, like oceanfront, you know, shotgun house.
Sure, sure.
And I said, well, okay, but maybe the house in Chicago would want to look something different than this one in California because we have such radically different influences, right?
Right.
Would you trust in me to deliver a Chicago house for you that has the same characteristics as the California one, but doesn't look like the California one? And he agreed, and thankfully he did. The project's been recognized by a number of design awards just recently. And so, again, having a client who trusts us,
yes,
to deliver for them the thing that I'm going to deliver, even though it doesn't look like what he saw and what he wanted, in the end it is exactly what he wanted, because what he saw was not the object of the building so much as the experience he would have in that building.
Right.
So as long as we design the experience, it's going to be fine. The building can look different, but the experience is universal.
It's all about that trust.
Yeah.
That exactly. Trust, establishing that trust, and then everything else is negotiable.
And it's
negotiable.
A blessing. I think I can speak for every designer when I say what a blessing it is to have clients that will give you trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because that brings great responsibility, too. And that weighs on us. As we understand this client is trusting us to deliver something special, we take that very seriously. And now all of a sudden our job is our really elevated, you know, our mm-hmm. expectations from others are really elevated. So it's nice to have the trust because it asks us to do our best work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the only way a great project happens.
For sure. And you know, I've struggled with that challenge myself in my own business and working for other designers. And I've talked to other design professionals as well who have struggled with that common, you know, why is my client trying to take control of this project?
Sure.
And what is missing? Like, why do they want to be so involved? Why aren't they just letting me do my job? And I think it always circles back to that trust. I've found if you have not established that level of trust, then they feel like they need to intervene and be a part of the process because you haven't instilled that level of trust that you're going to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a long time to figure that out for myself, and I love sharing that with other design professionals because it really is a game changer.
When you've got a client that trusts completely, it really gives you a great amount of freedom. Again, with freedom comes responsibility, and with responsibility, I think, comes a level of seriousness, and then when you're serious, you will do your best work. When you have a client that's fighting you, who's, you know, trying to drive from the back seat, so to speak, you know, take me to that great destination you're telling me about, Anders, but do it my way, you know, let me grab the wheel. And that's really challenging. And we have clients like that. We've had them in the past, and I think we'll have them in the future. What we've found helps mitigate that is demonstrating to them that we are skilled, and that if you do start with a little bit of trust, give me just a little bit, mm-hmm. and then let me prove to you that we will come through for you. And I think proving over the course of the project through small design solutions and helping them understand that their input is valuable, we certainly don't want our clients to disappear and not be a part of the process, because their influence is everything, right? We're designing for them. We need their input. We need their influence. But we don't need them to find the solutions.
You know?
And I'll often say to a client, talk to me about how you intend to live, not what you should live in. Because if you've solved it already in your head, you don't need me. Why don't we talk about what you intend to do? And I'll help you find a form and an organization for that will foster that kind of experience for you. Some clients just don't like to trust, though, I think fundamentally. And I'll be frank, I'm a bad client. You know, We've hired folks like web designers and other individuals who are doing like video production for us. It's very challenging for a person like me, who's normally the one in control, to hand that over and to just trust that that other creative person is going to lead me on the journey that I'm expecting them to lead me on.
Yes.
My better nature tells me just, you know, keep your mouth shut and let them do their work, because that's not your field. You don't know that like they do.
Right.
But it's hard. You know,
I know it's hard. I'm a lot like you, but I've learned to surrender. I've learned to surrender. It is so important. Oh my gosh, it's helped me sleep better at night. Like, I know what I'm good at and what I'm not.
Yeah.
And I know that, yeah, I could tackle just about anything.
Sure.
But the time required to really invest in that and get it to where you want it, and the level of frustration that's likely to come with it.
That's right. That's
I've learned over my years, just surrender.
Surrender, and sometimes, you know what, well, often what will happen is with that surrender, whether it's my client surrendering or us surrendering, we'll arrive at a place that's even far superior than what we had aimed for, because the process naturally allows for things to evolve. We talked about jamming and music earlier.
Mm-hmm.
All the greatest music pieces occur when there's that synergy in the band, where's that synergy in the orchestra, and everybody's working as a unit and elevating the piece of music beyond what it is just on the sheet, right? It's
right.
When the music's written on the page, it's fine. But when it's brought to life by the individuals and invested with that energy, it elevates to something spectacular.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Completely. I have to ask about our current state and how COVID-19 has affected your business, our industry, everyone else's business. I was really hoping by now that was all behind us, but the reality is it's having a much bigger impact on us than I could have ever anticipated, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So while we are fortunate that we're sitting across from a table right now at a safe distance,
of course,
and it's good to be here. I'm glad that we're here. But I think we have a long way to go. And I know that you have taken some steps and measures in your office. You've made some pivots in your business model in response. Could you share a little bit of that with us? Because I know so many of our listeners are in a place where they are having to make changes and respond to what we're up against today. And I think it'd be helpful.
Sure. It was a really interesting position to be in the middle of March, to suddenly hear we've got to send everybody home. You know,
right.
So just the fundamental tactical response. How do you separate people from the office? We're a creative environment.
Mm-hmm.
We're now suddenly going to be working from home. We needed to solve all those technical issues, which we were thankfully able to do pretty effectively, and after now 5-6 months, we've been able to run very effectively from afar. In fact, I'm thinking that we'll probably make this the new normal, at least from the perspective of having 1 to 2 days at home for each of the staff. And we'll rotate through the office in kind of a calendared wheel where we're all in the office together at some point, and then each one of us is working from home at some point. I'm finding that it's giving my staff a kind of breathing room that they really are happy to have.
Right.
It's also giving me a little bit of breathing room. We are one room. We have one room studio, and the five of us in one room, it can get a little crowded sometimes, you know? And as the go-to source, hey, Anders, you know, when five people are coming at you, it's difficult to do your work. So
sure.
I get the benefit of some quiet time now. So I think that the COVID response was one that we were forced into, would never have done otherwise, not a chance.
No way.
But it's going to yield some interesting results and some interesting patterns going forward that I think are positive.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that are really positive that have come out of it is what we saw as an awareness by the general public, our clients included, of just how important good design in a building actually is. When it's one thing to come home from work to your home, make dinner, go to bed, wake up, have breakfast, and leave,
right,
and do that cycle over and over again. You don't really begin to appreciate if your house is working for you well or not. Suddenly, you're in the house 24/7 and you can't go anywhere. It becomes very clear where the problems are. And when a client or the general public becomes aware that the built environment is failing them,
mm-hmm,
that they deserve better, that they can have better, and that they can get better by coming to a design professional like me, that's a win. I think that this has proven to be a great set of circumstances for all of us in the design profession.
Mm-hmm.
People suddenly get it. So from that perspective, we really elevated our advertising and started pushing ideas out saying, you know, look, you're working hard from home, but how hard is your home working for you?
Right.
What is it doing to support your lifestyle? Not only the one you've been forced into, but look back. Was it ever really supporting your lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
What is it you need it to be going forward? And those messages seem to resonate. You know, we didn't advertise really before, but I looked at this as an opportunity to project that message, because if the consciousness of the general public has been raised,
yes,
and we are now more aware of these situations, it's going to, I think, bring us the kind of people that we'd want to work for by asking them those questions. And if they're willing to look for answers, they'll come to us. And so far, that's proven to be true. I mean, we're as busy as we've ever been. So thank God. God bless us, and knock on wood.
Totally.
It's still going, and we seem to be okay. Of course, I'm always fearing, though, Rick, maybe there's another shoe that's about to drop. We have an election coming up, and that could really, you know, spin things.
Could shake things up, yeah.
But I think that there is a desire and a drive and a need for good design to solve what people are faced with now 24/7, 7 days a week in their own home,
mm-hmm,
or their place of business. You know, some people, like the folks around us here in this environment, they're still working. We're still working in our office. And we're seeing now that the built environment really does have an impact on our mental state, on our physical well-being.
Oh, for sure.
And qualified designers are the answer.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because I really do believe that now more than ever, you know, consumers are ready with those answers. They have spent the time in their homes. They have the answers to what's not working,
yeah,
and what they want changed. And to your point about, you know, what may very well become the new normal, yes, we all still need our offices. We need our teams. We're a collaborative art, and we need to be able to do that. But at the same time, I think a lot of us are still going to be working from home part-time for a long time, maybe even permanently if it tends to work for the business model. So there's needs at home as well.
Totally. And what a blessing we have the technologies that allow us to do this, you know,
yes,
working from home, notwithstanding all the problems that, you know, you can have with a Zoom meeting. But my God, what a blessing that we have Zoom and things like it, tools like that, that have allowed us to make these transitions. So,
right. You
know, again, I would never have sent all my staff home in a million years. So what we've learned, though, is that in these kinds of needs, there are always creative responses, and creative responses usually lead to good solutions. And that's what we do when we're designing a house. It's the same thing. Here's a problem. Here's the proposed solution. How does it solve the need, right? So as a problem solver, fundamentally, I think that being forced to solve problems in our business, in our society, in the way we look at everyday work, it's a good kind of shakeup.
Yes, for sure. thank you for sharing that. I think that's going to be really helpful for a lot of designers who, you know, were wondering, you know, is it only affecting me in this way? It's affecting everyone. And I think that the right approach is that innovative approach.
Embrace it. Look at it as an opportunity to get folks who are now aware of the problems they have to agree to finding solutions. And, you know, the solutions don't have to be a new house. The solution could be as simple as, you know, moving your desk from the corner over to by the window so that you get better light. You know, it can be that simple, but it's not the average Joe's ability to find those solutions. It's ours. We're taught how to do this. We know the subtlety of where a desk is in a room and how that will affect your ability to be functional at that desk. So now's the time to flex our muscles and really make clear to the rest of the world we're valued, we're worth what we're asking to be paid because we have knowledge you don't, and our efforts will yield so much better for you results that will allow you to, you know, live the best possible life.
Right.
And when people see that, I mean, it'll be unstoppable.
It's our time to shine.
I couldn't have said it better.
It is our time to shine. So, Anders, let's get to the signature questions.
Sure.
Can't wait to hear your answers to these.
All right. Drum roll, please.
So, what would you say is the secret to your survival? And when I say that, I mean, like, you know, what is the secret to your success? What has kept you in this business for so long?
Two things. Number one, I mentioned it earlier. I love what I do. I'm fortunate that I love what I do. I work, you know, 14, 15-hour days sometimes, but I love it. And it's not that it's not frustrating. It's not that there aren't times where I want to pull my hair out or, you know, kill somebody, myself included. But when I go to bed at night, I don't worry about waking up the next day and having to go to work. I love waking up in the morning to go do my business. So I'm very fortunate that I love being an architect, and I love having surrounded myself with smart, creative people that make my job a joy. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the secret. The other part of the secret, though, is from a business perspective, trying to stay ahead by acting as though we're still behind. You know, the best way to stay out in front, or the best way to try to be out in front, is to constantly react and make plans as though you are way behind. Right. Because if you feel you're in the front and you're coasting, that's a really bad place to be. And, you know, I've gotten to places like that where I was like, wow, okay, this is really great. And you kind of get comfortable. And then you then you see the folks on the other side, you know, coming up on you on the race. And you're like, oh, shoot, I'd better turn on the gas.
Yeah.
So keeping your eye looking behind you to make sure that you're still running your race and that you're acting as though you're behind, even if it's just a race with yourself, whatever your goals are.
Sure.
I'm not even talking about comparing yourselves to others. What are your goals, and are you ever able to attain them? Only if you see yourself as being behind will you have the initiative to catch up. And so that's kind of a principle that I live by.
Yeah, I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
It's a great principle to live by. What would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then?
I think that a truth that I knew then but didn't trust in then is one that I trust more in now, and that is to be bold, right? Is to take risk. And the challenge with risk-taking is that, you know, when you're 20 years into a career, taking a risk puts in jeopardy potentially a lot more things.
Mm-hmm.
When you're beginning your career, you have a lot less to risk, so you can afford to be bold.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing I would advise all young designers and young business people is be bold right out of the gate. Continue being bold until something absolutely stops you, you know?
Right.
What you'll probably find is that nothing can stop you. And when you have less to lose, you have more opportunity to really be audacious. And what better thing to do in design and in your business than to be audacious and just go for it, you know? So I think that's one of the things that guides us today. Of course, we're in a slightly different position. We didn't just start our firm, but we still like to think about that as like, what could we do that's a bold, innovative idea that'll help others see us as different, help others understand what differentiates us from the rest.
Right, right. You can still do that within you know, realistic limitations.
Sure.
You can always do that.
Well,
it never has to go.
You know what I do is I encourage my younger staff now. Like, it's your turn. You be bold. You know, knock my socks off. Do something crazy.
Right.
But show me what you can do. You know?
And don't worry, you're in a safe place.
Yeah, yeah. And encourage those who are who are in those positions to be able to do that, to really stretch their wings and go crazy. And when we've done that, it always yields great results. You know, not all the time are we able to take everything that they've done, but it usually leads the conversation into a place we wouldn't have otherwise been.
Right.
You know, and that's design. Design is going where you otherwise wouldn't go.
Exactly. That is the creative process right there. And how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
I've been fortunate that in my career, there were a number of mentors and folks that I looked up to and who took me under their wing and shared with me advice and just professional perspectives. They showed me how to be an architect. They took interest in my schoolwork and asked me to push myself farther. So I try to do likewise with both my professional colleagues. We bring in student interns every summer. And I like bringing in the interns for two reasons. It's mutually beneficial. I love the new, fresh, young ideas and their ability to use new technologies. We can adopt that. What I also love, though, is that they don't necessarily have any experience in an architect's office. Sitting with a client, going to a job site, seeing the way the business of architecture works, which is radically different than what you learn in school. The two things are so far apart. So I like to bring in interns every year because it infuses a lot of energy into our firm, and it also infuses a lot of knowledge into them. And frankly, I've seen some of my interns drop out of architecture.
Because
it's just, they realize that the business and what they're learning in school don't necessarily align in a place that makes them happy, right? Some of the other things that I like to do, we do a lot of pro bono work. Like, for instance, we recently finished the basement gallery renovation for the Laguna Beach Art Museum. And that was a great joy. We did it pro bono. We did it for free, but that was because they trusted in me. In fact, when the director of the museum came and he said, "Would you be interested in helping us renovate this?" I said, "Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I'll do it for free if you trust me." And I could see his face go pale, you know, like, oh, what the hell does that mean?
What are you going to do?
But they did, and they trusted that we could elevate what was this basement, kind of a forgotten back gallery that was rarely visited and very uncomfortable to be in. It's now been modified and turned into a really, I would say, a world-class gallery space in what is really a world-class museum. It got 30% bigger, and they've had nothing but great success with it since we finished it. So, you know, being able to show people the light and give my talent to them is a great reward, because when I saw the end of that project, I felt like, wow, that's amazing. Not only did they trust, but in the end, we delivered that baby, and it was a really beautiful baby. I do a lot of teaching, too. A lot of the local schools will have me come out for project critiques, guest lecturing, and teaching. That's something I love doing. I taught at Cal Poly Pomona for 2 years after I graduated. And I thought maybe that's why I went and got a graduate degree. I thought I was going to be an instructor. And I love teaching. I really like sharing with others innovative ideas and seeing where they can go with it. There's a wonderful energy about it. But I also really loved making buildings. And so I realized really being an architect in practice was for me. But I keep one foot in that environment by guest lecturing and doing critique as well.
Excellent. Well, Anders, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be a part of the podcast. It's been so great talking with you.
It was an honor.
And
thank
I can tell you right now, there's going to be a part two and a part three because I have so many more questions for you now. As you're speaking, I'm jotting down questions and reminding myself that we only have 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But I really, really appreciate you taking the time. I think it's going to be very informational and inspirational for everyone that's listening. So
it was
thank
a great
you.
Conversation. You're welcome. Thank you for having me. And I would love to come back and, you know, sharing these kind of ideas and having this conversation is what keeps the heartbeat of design, of good design, alive. It's how we make sure we're doing the right thing when we go back to our office and, you know, the drudgery of 9 to 5, let's be honest, we have to keep our clients happy. It is work, but it's work for a purpose, right? And when we think about that purpose, when we reinforce it with conversations like this, it gets me excited to want to get back into the office and do that. So thank you.
Yeah. How can we find you on social media? What is your website so that people can learn a little bit more about you?
Website is AndersLassiterArchitects.com. I think if you just put in Anders Lassiter and spell it any way you can, it won't matter. Google will help you find it. We're on Instagram as well as Anders Lassiter Architects. I also have my own personal Instagram page, just Anders Lassiter. I like to make photography as well, so some of my photos are up on there. But you shouldn't have too much trouble finding us if you want to look.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Of course. Thanks, Rick.
Let me start by thanking you for hanging in there with Anders and I as we explored the many parallels between music and design. From one musician to another, we may have geeked out just a little, but at the end of the day, the process truly is like a symphony or a heavy metal band. Every team member has a role, and the combined energy truly creates magic. The next time you struggle to find an analogy to express to your client why we all need to work together, give this one a try. It's actually more relatable than you may think. I really love the way Anders refers to his team as communicators. Now, we've covered the art and value of communication in many variations on this podcast, but Anders really nailed it when he defined the three forms of communication that are the foundation of his business. I think they should all be key requirements in every employee's job description. We made COVID a real and intentional part of our conversation because I know that so many of you are in a place of regroup and respond. There's a new normal on the horizon. It's developing as we speak. And I appreciate Anders' acknowledgement that COVID caught everyone off guard, including him. However, just like his design process, Anders seized the moment and evaluated needs, the needs of his clients, the needs of his business, the needs of his employees, and got to work on developing solutions. Challenges can be overwhelming, but solutions are empowering. I hope this podcast episode has inspired you to create new solutions for your business. If you love Design Biz Survival Guide, share with a friend, tag us on social media, and if you're listening on iTunes, rate the podcast and tell us your biggest takeaway from your favorite episode. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.